everyone. It's Martha Novak here, and this is a show called Real Talk with Martha Novak. I'm awfully glad to be with you today. We're talking about something that's a very important topic, which is black and white thinking. Black and white thinking, rigid thinking, a search for absolutes all the time in a world of gray. So, that's today's topic. We're going to have a lot of fun with it. I hope that you all will enjoy thinking about this because I haven't ever met anybody in life, including myself, whose minds won't benefit from being open to more. So let's do it, right? I'm going to apologize now. We're still in winter, so I'm not quite sure why my nose is running, but my nose is running. It might be early pollen or something. But if you see me doing that, I just don't want to drip from my nose. As horrible as that is when you do anything in public, whether it's a speech or a broadcast like this, you just don't hide anything. So I might as well go on and confess that for some reason this morning my nose is running. Okay, kids, that's it. Enough things like that. So, guys, that's what we're going to talk about. I found an article called The Telltale Signs You're in a Black and White Thinking Pattern. We're going to launch off from that. It's by Erica Sweeney, and she's taken it from psychiatrist and chief medical officer at LifeStance Health, Anisha Patel Dunn. What a pretty name. Anyway, we're going to talk about it from that article, and as usual, I'll launch off into consciousness on my own. I have a few ideas and stories. Okay, kids, let's do a prayer, get us all on the same page, actually get me on the same page with you. It would help if you are on the same page with me, and we'll go forward. Dear God, thank you so much for our being together today, for the friends I already see popping on the air with me. I'm so glad to be here. We're so glad to be here under the banner of knowing more about ourselves because you are all we are. And we're either letting a trickle of you through or letting a lot of you through like a roar. And that's when we're living our potential. So we open ourselves now to see, hear, sense, and know what you would have us do as we open to the truth that lies in our own enlightenment. We ask that you speak to us through some of the things we learn and when we get off the air, some of the things that you show us this week about ourselves. Let us observe. Let us be aware, dear God, that this is a direct communication from you. In this confusing world, that gives us comfort. We thank you so much, dear God, for all of this. And we say right now that we know nothing. We know nothing. For it's the you through us and through all things that know it all. And we open to that part of ourselves. Thank you. And so it is. Amen. All right, kiddo keens, let's dive in. One of the reasons I'm talking about this today is I'm giving a course to my advanced class on creativity, on really opening up creative channels that might not have been open before. So to do that, we have to talk about what they might still have left, a vestige of something even, that could interfere with creativity. Excuse me, there's something now in my eye. And so those things are important to acknowledge. What's standing in my way, right? What came through to me in my prayers, in my meditation, before I started this class this quarter, is that it's going to be extremely important for all of us to be flexible and adaptable. I said this last week as well about another topic. Spirit is asking us to all turn on our flexibility and adaptability. But the interesting thing about this is a lot of people are anxious instead of being flexible and adaptable. By the way, these are learned and inherited behaviors. I say inherited because what do you inherit? You inherit the energy, and you've seen somebody do these behaviors, and to protect yourself from that energy of anxiety and fear and all that kind of stuff, you take on their pattern, all right? In other words, you weren't born into the world as a black and white thinker. It's something that you learn to do. More importantly than ever, if you're a black and white thinker, and we're going to talk all about it and define it and everything so you really understand it, you're not adaptable and flexible. And let me tell you, this world is going to require it. And the people that aren't adaptable and flexible are going to have a really hard time adjusting, adapting, finding solid work, and contributing their value to this world. So instead of going, oh my God, I can't do it, the thing to do is to confront, as we are going to show you how, your black and white thinking. I have had, it won't surprise you to know that in my practice, I have had lots of black and white thinkers. It takes them a little while to get out of it, but I'm really proud of one of them. She's just amazing, and she turned out to be a very creative person. But I have a funny story about her, and she knows I tell this story because it's one of my favorites. So, she was very much into black and white thinking, very much into the way life should be. It was a pretty scary childhood, and her mother fostered that in her. She was a very much of a black and white thinker. I think her dad to a lesser extent, but her mother was her primary influence, all right? So, this is the story. So she's all an adult now, and her husband, she has this sweet, dear husband who's also in this work, and he's trying to get his supplements organized in the kitchen. I think that's what, as I recall, he was doing, and he's counting things out, you know, and putting them in their little boxes so he'll remember to take them. And she's in another room, having no idea what he's doing, and quite frankly, not caring, because she said, she raised her voice and said, honey, will you go down and get the so-and-so, I don't remember what it was, out of the basement, it's too heavy for me to carry. And because this goes on all the time, he got mad. It's like what he told me in session was, she didn't care about what I'm doing, that I think what I'm doing is important. She just, you know, makes these demands. Now, did she mean that? No, not really, and yes, she did. So we have to look at the whole emotional picture, because let me tell you, you're not just good or bad in that emotional body. You're a contradiction of things. That's why so many people really don't understand therapy, because you're both. My job is to challenge the things that are still not in keeping with your highest self mind. If you're still in the egoic structure, that's the part of you I'm challenging. But most of us are mixtures of things, you see. All right. Good. So he got very angry with her. You don't care about what I'm doing. You don't care that what I do is important. So both of these are clients. I heard him come in. He told me his story. She came in. She told me her story. And I said to her, can we work from a premise from now on that you've never worked from, which is he's always doing something important? So then your dialogue becomes, darling, I know you're doing something important. When you're finished with that, there's a little favor that I sure would appreciate your doing for me, because I tried to do it for myself and a cat. And if you wouldn't mind bringing something up from the basement, I'd appreciate it. That wouldn't have made him mad, you see. So I suggested that. And when I suggested the whole thing to her, she got angry at me. Oh, a lot of people get angry at me. It's so interesting how people get angry at the one person that's telling them the truth. Yes, I am suggesting change. That's what makes people mad, right? Because it flies in the face of how they do things. She said to me in her anger, "Do you mean to tell me that I have to think about everything I say to my own husband in my own house?" And I said, "No, it's not what I'm saying. Because you've got that marriage. You've got that relationship. You've got how that is. I'm saying if you want a better one, yes." To her credit, she heard me. To her credit, through the years and through our work together, this is almost a thing of the past. I have another story to tell you about her later on. I'm very proud of both of them. They have really come through. All right. So we're doing Telltale Signs You're in a Black and White Thinking Pattern by Erica Sweeney. And I think she talks a lot about several people, as a matter of fact, now that I'm looking here. So I'm going to credit them too as we go, okay? All right. The first thing she says is, "Do you find yourself thinking in extremes or absolutes?" I'm so glad she mentioned that word, absolutes. I like the fact of extremes too, because when you're in black and white thinking, you are in the periphery of reality. You're not here in the gray area where you've got lots of choices and options, and there's it's going to require flexibility and adaptability. It's either that way or this way. You see? Interesting, huh? That way or this way. And one of the things that I see is very damaging with clients of mine that come to me that have some degree of this is that, and how do I want to put this? They seek absolutes their whole life. They never really live. They're never really happy. They're running to find an absolute when there are no absolutes. It damages their workplace environment. It damages all their relationships. You'll see. I've got those stories for you. So what I'm wanting you to realize is if you are doing this at all in any area of your life, or most of the time, people do it all across the board. They seek absolutes. They live in extremes. We're going to tell you how to spot it. She says, "You might view everyone as in the category of good or bad, rich or poor, all or nothing. There's no in-between. There are no gray areas. This is black and white thinking. It's also known in psychology as polarized thinking. You're on a pole, you see. It's difficult because when you're in a relationship with somebody and you are triggered, you hold on to that pole and they hold on to their pole and you're off to the races. There's a divide, right? Yeah. You think sometimes when you're in this, in polar opposites, without accepting the idea of a gray area." All right. Polarized thinking, though, is, and I want you to know this, a coping mechanism. It is actually a coping mechanism. A coping mechanism. And it can negatively impact mental health. A coping mechanism. Okay. Now, anybody can have this. Again, a childhood created it, okay, a certain kind of childhood. But it can be a symptom of a personality disorder. And I just want to mention this because narcissism can contribute to this. Borderline personality disorder sometimes has this. eating disorders, depression. Why wouldn't you be depressed if you're a black and white thinker? Because the world isn't like that. Why wouldn't you be depressed? You say, why wouldn't you? I think anybody tends to be depressed when they are not going in the direction of their potential, of their highest selves. I think when we negatively talk to ourselves, which always happens in black and white thinking, I think when we do things like that, we are depressed. We don't even know why we're depressed because we're not listening to ourselves. The negative talk is habitual. And oftentimes when I'm working with clients and they tell me what they're thinking about themselves and what they said to themselves, I say, well, I would be depressed too. And that is a truism. Anybody who would talk to themselves or think those thoughts about themselves would be depressed. And yet they say, in their unawareness, I don't understand why I'm depressed. Guys, the path that you're on, the path that we're all on, hello, Jay. Oh, I'm so glad that you're with us today. Am I talking about the Michael Jackson song? No, as a matter of fact, I'm not. Or anything racial. This is the way we think in our heads, but you're just a joker. Hi, everybody. I'm so glad that you're with us today. I see all my friends over there, even friends I haven't met yet, still friends. But most importantly to realize that this black and white thinking doesn't have to go with anything. It's just a cognitive distortion. It can be a sister to some of these things, eating disorders, depression, anxiety, all that kind of stuff. But the fact of the matter is it's more likely than not part of you just as a habit, as something you inherited, and as a coping mechanism in life. And it started in your childhood. You know, if we overlearn when we're kids, what's good, what's bad, what's right, what's wrong, if we had parents that were very judgmental and very hard on us, what happens is we either rebel, which means the issue is still there, by the way, or we start believing that. And so we get out of our parents' home and then we're judging everything that way, especially ourselves. Because on some level of our psyche, we think we need that. Really? Guys, you don't need this. I say with all my heart, guys, you don't need this. Black and white thinking causes a major impact on our relationships, our ability to succeed in whatever we're doing, and other aspects of our life, and I'm going to mention one, and that is creativity. See, I believe with all my heart we're creative in different ways. We may be creative mathematically. We may be creative artistically. We may be creative in a sense of marketing. We may think out of the box in areas of our lives, you see. But let me tell you, black and white thinking is going to shut that down. I grew up in the theater. I grew up acting. I acted for the best part of my a long part of my life, not the best part. I think I'm in the best part now, but certainly a long part of my life, and acting in theater and film. And I taught improv classes because I did a lot of teaching. Jay says spirituality is in the middle of black and white thinking. You're right. What Jay is saying is if you're going to reach your divinity, if you're going to reach your spirituality, you've got to adopt the whole thing of you, right? This is not a question of staying on the periphery. This is, I am everything, you know? I'm here in the middle. I'm just me. And by your accepting, here's a word that people have a hard time with if they have any narcissism. So watch for this and your reaction to this. But if they have any problem with being ordinary, you have a real hard time finding your spirituality, that divinity. Because the divinity is in the ordinariness. It's in the acceptance of us as a whole, you see? Okay. Now, all right. It certainly impacts, what I was about to say is it certainly impacts creativity. We're all creative in our way, all of us. If you think you are not creative, and I have loads of people come to me and say, I'm not creative. And I say, well, just you wait. Because all that means is you're stopping yourself. That's all it means. You're not opening the doors. You're not opening up these cognitive distortions that may be in your way. Okay? A little later on, I'm going to do a show on creativity. I think I've already done one. But having taught this class now on creativity, we've got a lot to talk about, even more. Okay. I want you to think of your energy as an investment. And what you're investing your energy in is what you get more of, because that is a communication with the universe. What you're investing your energy in is what you get more of. So if you're in the basement all day watching porn and you expect to have one day a good, healthy relationship with somebody, it isn't going to happen because you're doing that instead of being out meeting people and finding out how to improve yourself as a partner and having a better life experience in the relationship area. Make sense? I hope it does. If you are too busy squirreling yourself away and working too hard and then going home and collapsing every night, every weekend, you are not going to generate a love interest. You already have one. Your work. And why you're doing this, probably because you don't think enough of yourself. And so you give it away to somebody else, and then you don't have to make decisions for yourself. Then you don't have to be a good partner to you. There are lots of ways to do this. The fact is that your energy, this precious thing called energy, is an investment for you, and you're investing it one way or another. And it's really important for us to be aware, wake up, and go, I'm investing my energy in something, and I don't want more of this back. I want this instead. Therefore, you have to change the investment. You have to change the investment of energy, which often means changing the behavior, changing your thinking, and certainly coming out of this black and white thinking pattern. There are other thinking patterns. We've talked about a lot of them. Perfectionism is one of them. Oh, man, that's the sister to black and white thinking, isn't it? It is. Okay, so what we're talking about when we're talking about black and white thinking is a rigid thinking pattern. And believe it or not, in spite of somebody thinking they are being very realistic when they're doing this, they're not. This is unrealistic. All right? Because the world is not one way or another exclusively. It is simply not. People are not. Things are not. People with this severe cognitive distortion, and you've heard me lecture on cognitive distortion. I'm just picking this one out because I thought this was a good article to launch from. They have a hard time communicating. They have a hard time communicating with people. This woman that I was telling you about that I love very much had loads of children, and she said, I had loads of children because I've never been socially comfortable, and so children were something I could control. That was part of this. Oh, she loves her children dearly, don't get me wrong, but the reason she had them was not certainly well motivated, you see, or the poor motivations were mixed into the good ones. They have a hard time communicating with society. Many go undiagnosed and untreated. This is easy to hide, isn't it? Unless somebody is actually looking for it. I want you to be aware, and I'm hoping and praying today that as we work, that I'm going to open up the awareness that you are still thinking in absolutes sometime and that you're still seeking absolutes. If you have anxiety, if you have a low-grade anxiety, anxiety is a sign a lot of times. It's just a sign. I'm feeling anxious, at which time what you're the emotionally mature thing to do with that is, why am I anxious? What's making me anxious here? And is it true that I should be anxious with this? And if it's not true, where did this come from? And now, what am I going to do about it, which is the emotionally mature way to handle this? You understand? Okay. But instead, sometimes, of our doing that and asking all those questions and being introspective, we then try to seek the next absolute so that we can put our energy into that, and that'll make us feel better. We'll relieve the anxiety for a while if we see something we think is an absolute. If we are cleaning the kitchen excessively, okay? If we are picking up excessively, if we are doing anything excessively, we might want to ask why we're having to distract ourselves from that anxiety instead of looking at it and getting through it and dissipating it. If we can find out why you're feeling anxious, and if we can find out why you're doing what you're doing, which is a relief from the anxiety, we can pretty much find the anxiety and get rid of that. It's just energy. Black and white thinking refers to a rigid mindset. I'm back to the article now. And that is a quote from Christopher Hansen, who's a PhD. He is a licensed professional counselor at ThriveWorks in San Antonio. I like that line. Black and white thinking refers to a rigid mindset, and rigid is right. It doesn't allow a person the latitude to see the nuances in situations or in life in general. Now, what did I say about adaptability and flexibility? You can't have those things unless you're seeing the nuances and negotiating in the nuances. Guys, this is so important now for you. In other words, you don't consider the gray areas or the middle ground. And as Jay says, if you're looking for yourself, there it is. All right? That's where all of this that you say you want is. Not only that, but in this very wacky world, and it is a very wacky world, and by the way, this wacky world is going to continue for the rest of your life and beyond, okay? Because this is the time of individual consciousness, and the world is wacky trying to make everybody introspect. Don't you understand? This is that time in our world evolvement. So, absolute thinking, rigid thinking, black and white thinking prevents us from seeing things as they really are, which is nuanced and complex and, by the way, always changing. I'm thinking very much of a client of mine I'm quite fond of. She came to me and studied with me and left me. And she said she left me because things were always changing. And she came back to study again for the same reason. The first time she was just afraid of change and deepening and growing and seeing what was down there and the introspection that we were doing. And it is always changing. How much can you know about yourself? And once you do know everything about your childhood and everything about everything, and you've got it all in its proper place, guess what? You can't tell the story anymore. It's old news. So now it's about playing in the field of your potential. Why do you have to go through all that to get there? You ever ask yourself that? Because it's energy. It's energy that is the energy of the potential. It's just trapped in old things, in old fixations. Psychology doesn't tell you what's fixated. I'm telling you, it's energy. It's energy around these old beliefs and old systems and old things and old hurts and old wounds. If we can release those, where does the energy go? It goes right into the present moment, right here, right now. And what do you do with it? You create a great life. You manifest anything you want. You create wonderful things that change the world and change you and change everybody that around you in your sphere. That's where you're really of value. But you need all the ego, child's mind, the old crapola, all these cognitive distortions, because we need the energy of them once we release them through therapy to do something else. It all becomes part of the new system. You see this. There's nothing good or bad. When we first start work like this, we say everything is good or bad. Our ego, child's mind are bad. They're not bad. This is the poor little kid in you, brilliant, coping the best way you know how, and one of them is to pattern off people that are already doing wacky things, don't you see? Yeah. Why wouldn't everything be changing? Everything is deepening. Everything is growing. Everything becomes more insightful as you go. Powerful stuff. Now, the black and white thinker tends to follow rules to the letter, this Mr. Hansen says. Christopher Hansen. And that's absolutely true. They also follow something else that is never healthy, and that is tradition. I have said all along, quote from Martha Novak, there are no enlightened traditionalists. None. You will never find one. So if you follow the rules, you're heading down the traditional path. Not only that, kids, but if you're following the rules, you're one step away, and most people make that step, of living by rote. That means doing the same thing every day, expecting the same result, doing the same thing, expecting that the next day will be exactly the same as this, keeping yourself very safe, living by rote, not taking chances. By the way, this is the road to depression, if I've ever heard it. Routine. Now, I'm all for discipline. I'm disciplined when I write. I'm disciplined when I eat healthily. That's good. Routine, not good. Routine, not good. There's no creativity in routine. You're living by rote. You're following rules to the letter. They may not even be your rules. But if you came from a very rule-centered household, they're your rules now because you never rebelled against them. You never asked yourself the questions about what are my specific values to live by. You can either have rules or values. You see? Values open the door. Values express who you are. And I think one of the really good ways to find your values. I'm going to say this again. I've said this in other radio shows. Get on the internet and find a list, as many values as you can. There are lists of, 100 values sometimes on the internet. Print that out. This is not an exercise you can do fast, by the way. I want you to choose 3 values that are you. Ha! But here's the rub. You have to choose 3 values you already are. Not the ones you want to be. Not the ones you want to become. I challenged a woman one time who said, my first value is love. And I said, well, what is that? You don't know what love is. You don't know what it means. You have a bad marriage. You've got to love others. What in the world? Love, please. That just sounds airy, fairy, and very nice. Can't have that one. And it was really interesting because she worked on this for weeks before she could find 3 values that she was. Kind, for example. She was that 100% of the time. Okay? And we had to strip away a lot of the fantasy. Oh, everything is so rosy and loving. Oh. But let me tell you, when historical fact slapped up against her fantasy, she was hurt worse than a normal person. That's the downside of fantasy. The other downside of fantasy is its own reward. You can't create anything from that. So when you're choosing these words that define who you are in terms of your value, it has to be something you're already doing 99 to 100% of the time. And then you take those 3 words and you make darn sure they are present in every situation, in every argument with your child, in every disagreement with your spouse, in every solitary, when you're stopped by a cop too because you ran a red light by accident. You have to make sure those 3 things are always present, because here's the thing. The only thing to make you unhappy in life is when you abandon 1, 2, or 3 of those values. So it's really important for you to then say to yourself, boy, I feel bad, and I feel really bad. And I'm sitting here with a beer and a cigarette because I feel so bad. Now, what did I do? Let's talk about the values that I chose and how I betrayed myself, my highest self, because that's always going to make you unhappy. Ultimately, when you have mastered those 3, and you've got to be entirely emotionally honest with yourself, when you have mastered those 3, and they are in every situation for a few months, then you can choose 3 more to add to the list. Again, they've got to be things you're already doing. You're working on yourself the whole time, which is great. Work on yourself the whole time. You will be ready for more. But guys, we're either working for my issues or we're working for my values. Working from your values is the emotionally mature thing to do. And the values give you a creativity that are not there for a rule follower. They're not there for a rule follower. Values are not rules. Values are privileges. Values define who you are on the highest level of you. Now, this article goes on to say, and correctly, that, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. All right, hang on a second, kids. I just lost. Let's see if I can bring that back. Yes, thank you. I've got to get my husband looking at that because he's a computer expert, and my computer goes down when I don't. I get so involved with what I'm saying, it goes blank, and then I have to enter my, data again to bring back Blog Talk Radio. So, I'm still on. Okay. Black and white thinkers use words over and over again. Okay? Always. Never. Perfect. Terrible. Good. Bad. I had a client that always used the word heinous. Everything was heinous. If you find yourself using a word like disaster or anything over and over and over and over again, you might want to look at your black and white thinking, and here's a sister to black and white thinking, your histrionic personality disorder. A histrionic personality makes things terribly dramatic. The thing about this is they all look like they're feeling, and they're hoping that'll scare you away from challenging them. But they're not feeling on the deepest levels. Otherwise, they wouldn't be rolling around in all this, right? These words and words like them are on the edges. Is everything always? No, everything's not always. You always do this, do you? Really? When you're sleeping, do you do it? Do you do it when you're fixing dinner for the family? I don't think so. Never. You never do this. Really? Everything's perfect. Perfect's one of my favorite words. Nothing's ever perfect. Guys, the only perfection there is in the world is the perfection of God. And if you're looking for that for yourself, this divinity that Jay so pointed out, it's in the imperfection. It's your acceptance that you are imperfect. Ordinary, by the way. Human. Your divinity is in your humanness and the acceptance of it all. Get it? Terrible. Oh, and by the way, there's no such thing as perfection except in your own mind, and it's a cognitive distortion. And people that have perfectionism issues are always people that have relationship problems because they're putting their task and their goals above their relationships and above people. It's never going to work. Mm-mm. Things are terrible. Good or bad. Honey, we should have left that when we were maybe 7 or 8, words like that. They help at one point. But when our parents still are in black and white thinking, they teach us to be there. They teach us there's something to be afraid of out there, even if it's not named. A lot of people that come to me don't know what they're afraid of. It's just that they're afraid of whatever their parents were afraid of. They're afraid of fear itself. Come on. Well, you're not going to be able to do that and continue on in the consciousness work. Because you're going to have to challenge yourself to get out of this black and white thinking, out of thinking things like this. You must tell the absolute truth. When you're communicating with spirit, with the universe, with God, whatever word you want to use, you have to be quite literal and quite honest. You can't say, my life has never been good. Really. That means absolutely nothing to any of us that are working in this arena, especially to our dear God who loves us. Now, unless you say it, go right ahead, use the word. But what you're doing is limiting you and creating that. Why would you do that? This isn't about personality, what I'm talking about right now. This isn't about whether you're a good person or a bad person. This is you're already a good person. You're just working against yourself. This is self-sabotage all the way. That's all. Right? You're going to have to wake up and realize what you're doing. Okay. We use, all of us use these words from time to time. You understand that, right? We do. But if you habitually use these words, If you going back to these words, and you're going to have to wake up to even hear yourself, because a lot of times you don't. That's what we're talking about. When you habitually use these words, it reveals to anybody who's listening a thinking pattern that isn't in your best interest. It's interesting because a lot of people get mad at me right at this point. And I will say to them, it happened this week, I'm not worried about it. And by the end of our two-hour session, everybody knows exactly what they're doing, of course, and they are going, oh, silly me. I love working with the clients I do because they all have awareness about what they're doing, even if they don't want to admit it at first. But it's so interesting because I'll say to them, there are two people in this room and only one person is working for you right now. And it isn't you. And they're shocked by that because they're trying to hold on to a familiar even if it isn't good, even if it has made their lives miserable, and even if they're complaining about the life they've created using this thinking. That's what I mean. Sometimes it's not even conscious, kids. Another sign of black and white thinking is viewing people or situations in your life as perfect or flawed, saint or sinner, good or bad. Okay? One of the things that we said is that this often goes with borderline personality disorder, and borderline personality disorder uses these to the extreme because borderline people are very angry. They cover it up a lot of times, but they will extol someone instead of just accepting them as human. And then they do something that the borderline personality doesn't like, and all of a sudden they are anathema. They're the worst person in the world. You know you have a problem, guys, if your mood swings like that. And there's help all around for things like this. It shouldn't. We should feel the same about everything. All the time. What's wrong with a stable mood? That's what you're going toward when you do consciousness studies. This article goes on to say certainly something I've mentioned before, which is black and white thinking is a learned habit, and sometimes it's inherited. The energy is inherited. It's influenced sometimes by trauma, mental health condition, other factors, vulnerability, insecurity when you're a kid. If your childhood, I'm going to launch off a minute, was particularly unstable and you were a sensitive kid, as most kids are, you seek absolutes to quell anxiety. You seek perfection so that nobody will jump on you. Nobody's perfect. But in your head, you're trying to live up to a goal that just isn't there to quell your anxiety. Let's look at where your anxiety came from. Let's look at why you're doing this. Let's look at who you got it from and make different choices. This perfectionism is the black and white thinking in many cases because nothing will do but your perfection. You say, that's black and white, isn't it? Perfection or I'm nothing. Wow. Yeah, that's black and white. It's ridiculous. It's irrational. The article goes on to say, is just as with any unhealthy, and this is unhealthy, coping technique, it becomes a habit we repeatedly turn to in times of stress. So we begin to develop a pattern. I will also say that every time you use it, you convince your psyche that you have to use it. And this is where entrenchment comes from. Entrenchment. You dig a ditch for yourself that you can't get out of. Well, you can get out of it. It's going to take some energy, that's all, and some different decisions. Without awareness of these thought distortions, or understanding the strategies we can use to change them, we'll talk about that in a minute, we feel that we're stuck in a loop of these automatic thoughts. In fact, I have clients that come to me and say, it's a force. I can't overcome this force. Well, they are their own force, kids. There's nothing outside that is compelling this. It is you not ready to give this up yet. So what do you think when you come to me that I'm going to work on? Getting strong enough to challenge this crap and do something else. Sometimes I work on that exclusively for a while until you're ready. And then it's so interesting because everybody gets ready because it's the natural part of them. So guys, the part of you that's asleep is this ego child's mind. And the reason it's asleep is it only knows about itself. It does not know about the highest mind. The highest mind knows about the ego child's mind. As a matter of fact, I often do a little game, and I say, take a blank sheet of paper, okay? Now put a little teeny prick of a dot in it with your pinpoint. That's the ego child's mind, and everything else is your potential, your highest self mind. And yet, that little teeny dot is driving the bus until you challenge it, like we're talking about doing. And your privilege, your quest, is to go from that dot to the whole. Hi! Oh, Janice, that is so sweet. Thank you. She just said, I hear you. That means a lot. Thank you. I laughed with my husband this morning and said, without your all's feedback, without your input, without your talking to me, sometimes I feel like I am just a voice in the wind. And I don't know where it's going. But I'm always hoping somebody can hear me. Thank you, sweetheart. How nice. Okay. Now, what I want to put on the table again, because this is really important, and I know I'm hitting you with a lot of information. There are no thoughts that have a force over you. They're automatic. I'll buy that. So we have to go in and work with that, right? We have to stop the automatic. First of all, we have to make you aware of the thoughts you're thinking, and then aware of how automatic they are. And aware of other choices and aware that many of those thoughts are, by the way, bold-faced lies. It's interesting because years ago, for this advanced class, it's been with me for 20 years, 25 years sometimes, I did a class on the lies we tell ourselves. And we challenged things like this, right? And then I said, well, what's the truth? And nobody could come up with the truth. They couldn't see beyond the lies. This is one of the reasons a good therapist is invaluable. Guys, this is not the time of the 50s when I grew up and everybody's worst insult you could give someone is go to a psychiatrist. You need a psychiatrist. No. This is about consciousness. This is about potential. This is about flexibility and adaptability and adding value to this world. This life is about that now. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go off the subject for just a minute with you to tell you something about how different everything is. So I took a course a couple of weekends ago through Writer's Digest. You know I'm a writer. I love taking courses. I have loads of fun taking courses. I read lots of books on writing. I want to be the best I can be. I'm just having fun, right? It's my learning curve because I love words so much, you know? And there's so much to know. It's so nuanced. Yeah? Okay. Well, I was taking this course, and what was I going to tell you about this course? Because, hang on, I have to double back and see what I was saying. Okay. (Clears throat) one of the things that I really learned is I could either hold on to what I created, or I could destroy it and create something else. It has occurred to me more than once in my life that God, that we all are, we are all the aspects of God we are, is an endless resource of change and deepening and ideas and contributions and fun. We are either taking our energy and beating ourselves up with it in some way, or we're creating something new. And the story I was going to tell you is a girlfriend of mine, my best friend, she's just one of my dearest friends, has been kind enough to read my stuff, right, at various levels of polish. And so when I took this course, one of the notes was, and this was a course on the first 11 pages, one of the notes was, you've got to start with more action. Because I tend to be very character-driven, right? I need to start with more action. So what did I do? I didn't try to save what I had. I threw the damn thing out and started again, had another idea. As a matter of fact, it was my husband's idea. It was a great idea, right? And I all of a sudden saw it, and I ran with it. And I gave it to my friend that afternoon to read. And she said, she told me only just like a couple of days ago, she said, I was completely thrown. You threw something that worked away, but it didn't work well enough. And I said, absolutely. You create and you destroy and you create again and you destroy and you create again. And guys, it's fun. Unless the ego's there. And the ego, child's mind, says, I may not be able to do this again. Oh, I can't throw this away. This line I'm so in love with, or this character. Yeah? Gonna stop you right away. Life is an improvisation. Let's go back to that thought. It's an improvisation. And what shuts an improvisation down? If I'm doing a scene with you, okay, and this is an improvisation scene, and it's just two people on a stage, and I say, whoa, it's beginning to rain, and you say, it's not raining. A resistance like that, a contradiction, a judgment like that, there's no place to go in the scene. You've just killed it. And if you're doing that with your life, you're also killing it. We have to go with, add to. What else is out there? Look around. Look under that rock and this rock. Talk to people. Interact. Get ideas. Input. I'm shocked at people who think they're not creative and they never watch television and they never watch a movie and they never go to a museum and they never. And it's like, well, you don't have enough information about life to do anything creative. And what stops them? Well, black and white thinking. Because this woman that I was telling you about, that I told you the story about twice now, had a rule for all those kids of hers, and that was no television at all. You didn't even earn television by your chores. No, it was for the stupid masses. Well, let me tell you something. Had my parents not plopped me in front of a television, had my parents not taking me to theater and opera and films, had they limited me in any way, had they punished me by taking those things away from me, I wouldn't be able to do what I do. I'm a very good dialogue writer. I can talk to people because I sat there as a child inputting all that in at one and reading, of course, and at one point I said, I can do that, and I started a journey. Now, here's the thing. If you didn't have that kind of childhood, you have it now. It's not going to stop you. Here's something interesting. I used to teach music to people. I used to teach boys to people to sing because I was a singer. And a lot of people think they're tone deaf. You know, there are very few people that are actually tone deaf. But how do you describe pitch to somebody, that they have to match this pitch? There's no way to describe it. Here's why somebody might think they're tone deaf, because they didn't have enough music in their home. Because if you have enough music in your home, you hear it and hear it and hear it, and all of a sudden you can match a pitch. So now if we can take those people as adults and play the music over and over and over again, guess what happens? They can match pitch. It's a fascinating world, ladies and gentlemen. Really different from what we thought. Now, here's the other part of what I learned from this marvelous course. Here's something else. It's real easy for all of us to say, oh, I wish I had, I'm having so much fun right now writing murder mysteries, right? Oh, I should have started 30 years ago. I would have been a better writer now, and I wouldn't be on such a strenuous learning curve. And here's the thing. This marvelous teacher blew that thought out of the water, and I'm blowing that thought out of the water for you if you're saying, oh, I should have, but I didn't, and so now I'm stuck. Guys, this is a different world. Had I learned to write 30 years ago, the way I'm writing right now, it wouldn't have been at all what the times require now. The reason she said start with action is people have too much distractions. They have television. They have radio. They have audiobooks. They have news coming on. All we input constantly. We're addicted to information. It's all coming from all directions. You think they're going to sit down and read a book that isn't exciting? I don't think so. It's very different from F. Scott Fitzgerald, kids, and what Hemingway did. If those are your idols, throw them out because it's not working. Enjoy them. Oh, absolutely. Enjoy the classics, too. But it's a different world. And you've got to learn to work with this right now. Right now. The world is different. It demands different things. Yeah. You talk about being adaptable and flexible? Yeah. Got to learn all about it. So we can say, oh, I should have started therapy a long time ago. It's too late for me. Too late to have a relationship. It's too late. Okay. So much drama. Throw the drama out, put it on the page, put it on the screen, put it in your whatever your work is. Don't do that. Let's learn something new. Let's learn what the market is now. Let's learn what's required of you now to be a viable contributor. You see? Okay. Back to our article. So thank you for letting me go off, because I always do. Communication, this article goes on to say, is at the heart of relationships of all types. Actually, I think the bottom line is that people are in some way making each other feel unsafe, and that shuts down communication, so I think there's something below that. However, communication is important in relationships. When someone is set in black and white thinking, the article goes on to say, there's no happy medium when dealing with conflict or other situations. There's only what? Right and wrong. My idea and yours. You see? Compromise is very difficult for people like this, with this kind of rigid thinking. There's never any leeway in most things. It causes them a lot of anxiety and depression and anger and overall angst. I think that the anxiety is there and a lot of these other things are there because they're not going in the direction of the highest self. They're caught in the loop of their own issues. They're caught in this way of thinking. It can interfere with a person's ability to see a situation objectively, so that they might overreact or respond inappropriately to stressful or triggering events. I mean, you might just have to quit your job, end a relationship, suddenly start viewing someone who is a friend as something else, as an enemy, and certainly a bad person. Now, I'm going to tell you another story. This will be my last story about the client. that was a rigid thinker at one time, okay? Her husband, who is also a client of mine, complained to me at one time that he just had the worst experience with her when he tried to talk about something in the news, for example, because she would go crazy thinking she was right and also being extremely manic. She had never learned in her childhood to give and take in a conversation and to hear somebody else's point of view. She was very dominant. You were not her friend if you didn't believe what she believed. She was always right. She had to prove she was right to you. Oddly enough, sitting around her dinner table when she was a kid was never very pleasant because her father challenged her and her sibling always to know what they were talking about. Okay. She was frightened about that. She was threatened by that. And so she brought it into her adulthood. She was very threatened about this. She could not have a dialogue. You bring up a story in the news and she's adamant. She's on top of it. She's manic about it. She's, you know, talking about all the other stupid ideas, and hers is the right one, and this is the only way, and here's what she knows about it. He complained to me, and he said, I can't even talk to my own wife about the issues of the day. It is so unpleasant. Well, when she comes into her session for about it, several months, guess what she complained about? He withholds. He doesn't talk to me. Now, here's the safety issue on the table, isn't it? Because if he just brought a subject up, she felt threatened that somebody was going to disagree with her, and she doesn't know what to do with that. You see? And so she would shut him down, and he wouldn't talk to her, and she thought something was wrong with him. When it was really, he didn't feel safe with her. She didn't feel safe either. That's why safety is at the bottom of a lot of communication issues. We, in a million years, we don't see what we're doing to make our partner unsafe. But we're all doing it. And we all need to wake up to that and stop. The article goes on to say, dichotomous thinking is an unhealthy coping strategy. Yeah, what else is new? Similar to substance abuse or overeating or overexercising, this can take a toll on, she says, your mental well-being. I say it's your mental emotional well-being. Why do I say that? Because it's the emotions that affect the mental well-being, darlings. It's always an emotional issue that's at the base of everything. When we're not feeling our best mentally, emotionally, it can be incredibly challenging to live our lives to the fullest and enjoy the things we most passionate about. Yeah, well, here's her version of saying you're either doing this or you're creative. You can put that investment into creativity. But if you're doing this over and over and over again, not very creative, kids. It's not the creative way to live. It's not the improvisation. You see, she never did learn to improvise. She does now, by the way. She can do it, and she can do it beautifully. I'll give you an exercise, an old acting exercise, but it'll show how locked up you are in your thinking. See this? When's a pen not a pen? Okay. Certainly I can use it for its function. But can you name 10 things that you can do with this pen that is not its function? You could put your hair into a bun and stick it there as a holder, right? You could, as a trachea tube, you could split it apart and put it in the hole there. If somebody's having trouble breathing, part of it, right? You could, what else could you do with it? You could stab somebody to death. I do write murder mysteries. You could do a lot of things. Well, come on, Peter. I don't know how to bring you in, darling. I just had a thing on the thing saying he'd want to join. I hope, Peter, you are on now for sure. Welcome. And in other words, a really good way of creative thinking is, when is a pen not a pen? Come up with 10 of them. How easily you do it is how you can get out of your own way creatively, you see? By the way, there's a wonderful game that I just adore. I often play it for myself. You can play it by yourself. You can play it with friends. It's a very creative game. It's called Paint Chip Poetry. Paint Chip Poetry. You can get it on the internet. Michelle says, I love murder mysteries. My husband is concerned. You know what, darling? My husband is too. It's really cute because in my first book, I killed a husband in the book. And Michael was very upset about killing the husband, and said, when I sent it to my editor in New York, he thought she was going to say, oh, don't kill this sweet husband, don't do that. She was very concerned about what I did to somebody else. The husband absolutely needed to be killed. So he still hadn't gotten over that. So I understand. You know, I think sometimes we turn to books like this because we want justice to be done. We want people to be caught that do bad things to other people. It gives us a sense of all being right with the world. And I think that's a nice thing to have right now with the world so wacky, you know, if I don't see anything wrong with it. Okay. Let's talk about how to break out of black and white thinking. We've talked about some of these things, but let's really put it in a summary. First of all, you've got to realize, darlings, that you're doing it. I think it becomes extremely important to hear what we're saying to ourselves. You keep in mind that on this journey from the ego child's mind to deeper consciousness in the higher mind, when your ego child's mind absolutely knows your intention, in the first few years, it shouts at you your issues, right? You can't do it. You can't. And then after that, it starts whispering. And you get real subtle. This is why a good therapist is just really invaluable, because they'll say, whoa, did you hear what you just said to yourself? You just made that good, when that's not healthy to get you onto your highest self. And you go, oh, my God, did I hear? I just heard it. It was normalized, you see. Jay says, how does rigid thinking get ingrained in our minds in an early age? Well, the easy answer to that is our mothers and fathers might have done it, you see. They may have been very judgmental. They may have been very adamant about things. All right? They may absolutely embrace absolutes. I know that with my friend that embraced absolutes, her kids, this massive amount of children that she had, embraced absolutes too. Now, several of them have eating disorders. That's an absolute. I'll eat these things, but not these things. These things are good for you. These things are bad for you. At the expense of what they might need in the moment, you know? You see? So that's certainly one of them. If you are in a household that's unpredictable or even violent, if their trauma is trauma there, why wouldn't a smart little kid try to find something to hold on to? Guys, all the people that are in cults and fundamentalist religions have never necessarily thought to think for themselves. So they're seeking the absolute of what somebody else thinks, some dogma. It makes them feel more secure. But guys, this isn't true emotional maturity. True emotional maturity is, what do you think? What are you doing? What's your thought on this? That you don't have to defend just because it's your thought. You have a right to it. You see, defensiveness is when you believe what the other person is saying, but you haven't yet admitted it to yourself. Defensiveness always says, I don't know whether I'm right or not. It shows a lot of self-doubt and insecurity. Why not learn to be secure? Now, a lot of people have childhoods that are unpredictable. As a matter of fact, there's been a lot of writing on that children that come from very unpredictable environments, some good, some bad, right, a mixture, often have this absolute thinking because they're trying to get back to the good each time. They seek it out. They try to avoid certain parts of their lives or people or things that might challenge that. In other words, Jay, there are many, many reasons for us to do that, but they all stem from insecurity, the non-development of the sense of self, not knowing what the values are and deliberately applying them, still going through the old doors of black and white thinking, trying to find absolutes, trying to quell our anxiety. Why don't we just accept our anxiety as a signpost and say, what am I anxious about and why? And what's really the truth beyond that? Let's do that instead. But what we do with anxiety is we will go, and one of the ways is to seek an absolute to quell our anxiety. Instead of looking at the anxiety itself as part of humanness, and life. A lot of people don't like to feel bad. We run away from feeling bad. I'm saying feeling bad's part of life. We should learn how to feel bad and how to take care of ourselves when we feel bad in a loving and gentle way, not born out of issues. What do I mean, not born out of issues? Well, you know, you can withdraw. Instead of, you know, what I recommended for this husband that I told you about, was to sit down and say, I don't like this part. When I would like to be able to talk to my wife about the news, but you are so dear and insecure that you can't have a normal conversation with me, and that's why I've moved away, and I don't talk to you about things like this. I don't talk to you about much because of what you're doing. You're thinking this is some sort of threat from your childhood, and it's not. It's just a husband trying to talk to his wife about the election. He should have sat at that conversation a long time ago. Instead, he did what he did as a little boy his whole life, and that is move away from his mother, who was just like that. Moving along. So, guys, you've got to, number one, recognize how you're feeling. So if you came from an emotionally suppressed home, and who didn't, to more or less degrees, kids, you've got to learn to be more emotionally fluid. You do. You've got to learn when you're speaking badly to yourself, and you've got to write it down and find out why. Who felt that in your childhood? Who told you that? All right? For example, I'm thinking of a family right now, and the son and the father are estranged, okay? The father is extremely smart and really likes to tell you how to do things. He never, ever said to the son, you're stupid. He would never say that. He's a good man. But he implied that every time. The son took it as I'm stupid, not, oh, here's a better way to do this. And the father was not sensitive enough to the son to see that he was taking it that way so he could correct it. There are loads of misunderstandings that happen in this world. Isn't it sad? Because it's about being aware now and seeing something like that and speaking up and saying, I think you're misunderstanding me here because I really don't mean it that way, dear. I just get enthusiastic. I know it can be done well. I know you can do it well. And here's the thing. The father does have an issue with wanting to do things perfectly, wanting to do things his way, the right way. He's a bit of a narcissist. Narcissist's going to get the task done at the expense of how other people feel. Doesn't everybody have a right to make mistakes and do it their way? I say yes. We all do. Judy, hey, honey. I so understood with your explanation. Oh, aren't you sweet, Julie? Judy, I'm so glad. Thank you. Thank you. You know, we are all good people, sensitive children at heart. In that ego child's mind, we're doing our best, we're trying to survive, but guys, we're either surviving or we're creating the life we want to live. So we've got to face the things that we're doing that's trapping the energy so we can use it for other purposes, guys. You got a great purpose here. Nobody's born without one. What is it? I don't know. It's going to come through you, but it's not going to come through you in black and white thinking. It's going to come to you in heightened creativity. Yesterday in the class, too, this was really fun. I said, everybody, okay, I want you to describe yourself for 30 seconds. I want you to tell me all about you, but I want you to tell me in gibberish. I want you to use one word I recognize. And it was real cute. Most of them did pretty well. There were one or two that didn't do as well. And here's the key to that. You got to know what you're saying. This is how I teach Shakespeare, by the way, a Shakespeare class. Because poor Shakespeare's when they don't really understand what they're saying and they're just saying those Elizabethan words, right? I don't see how they can do that. So I make everybody translate the Shakespeare into this language, into our modern 2023 language. Translate it. And now put the Elizabethan language on top of it and know what you're saying emotionally. Now you're good at Shakespeare, you see? So anyway, we did a real cute, fun thing, and most everybody was pretty good about it. It's real interesting because we're seeing where people get hung up in a class like that. There is something called neuroplasticity, and that means your brain can change. Your brain can change. The problem is, with all this, without confronting this, you're doing the same things to protect yourselves over and over and over again, like black and white thinking. And every time you use that, you entrench yourself more and convince yourself on an emotional level that you need to do that. You have got, at one point, to shift that. So we have to wake up and be aware we're doing it and know our options and do something different. Again, the script, the end of the script that you're writing is already written based on your issues from your childhood home. If you want a new ending, you've got to write a new script. That means, what are you doing now? What are you doing in this moment that's different, that's a new thought, that's a creative aspect of you you haven't tried before? Now, there is all hope, guys. But we have to replace these negative thoughts and these old ways, these old patterns of ours with something new. And I really hope you'll do that. Again, what we've got to do is change the momentum of thinking that way and going through those doors to a different experience. The answer to this is in the literal moment in your tuning into yourself. This one woman that I have been doing the show about, she'll be so pleased that I have told all her secrets. She's very cute. But anyway, she waked up one day. This was a big revelation for her. And she said, oh, my God, We are literally talking about the literal moment. And doing something in the literal moment and changing the dialogue and changing my mind and doing something different and more creative and more life-enhancing. And I said, there you got it. And now when you do that consistently, you have momentum built in the highest self, from the highest self, a different way of living, a different way of looking at the world, where you are privileged and joyous and creative, and sure, life happens there. It happens to all of us, darling. It isn't what happens to us in life. It's how we cope. It's how we react. If you go through these old doors, that has everything to do with your overall happiness in life, right? So let's not do that. Let's create new doors and new windows. Let's just knock out a wall. What do you say? Guys, thank you so much for listening. I'm going to stop there. We'll be back next week with something or other, and we'll have some fun together then, too. Dears, I want to thank you so much for what you do for me. You know, show up every week or most every week trying to do this and reach more people. And you're being very kind to get the word out about our shows through social media and all the things that you're doing, word of mouth and anything else that you can think of. We really appreciate that. We're trying to build our listenership. It makes it a more, hopefully, conscious world. We have quite the conscious community here. I love that some of you all are recognizing each other from every week. That's dear. Once in a while, I'll see a message go back and forth between you two. I love that. I do. I'm wishing all the best for all of you. So please keep putting the word out there. Jay just said something really interesting. He said, rigid thinking is the certainty, security of the familiar. It is. We choose the familiar sometime over the unknown, but the unknown is better because it's all God, right? It's all your creativity. It's all life. It's all everything. But if we haven't learned to live, I worked with a woman this week, last week actually, and I did a meditation with her, and she felt like she was in a shroud. And we cut the shroud off, and she says it's been a different perspective on the world ever since. Sometimes we actually learn in our childhoods, kids, not to live, not to commit to our lives. If that's you, I hope you'll challenge you. I hope you'll work with somebody, and let's get that off of you, because life's here for you. It's yours to do with as you want. And we're doing a show like this so you'll come out of those limitations and have fun. Create wonderful things. Add to this world. Contribute to all our lives. You're here to do that in some way. If you don't know what the way is, just start something. God's going to do this. You know, that image of the shepherd, right? Jesus. Yeah, that's the energy. You'll be helped. The whole universe is behind you. Let's do a prayer. Dear God, thank you so much for the opportunity to be together and to talk like we've been talking and to love each other and ourselves and open to a deeper level of our highest mind and bring love in whatever aspect, creative aspect, we are into this world. We ask now for great awareness if we're doing any of these things we've talked about today, and we ask to see, hear, sense, and know all of that we may change and grow and have different choices. We thank so much for all of that, and we thank you so much, dear God, for all of it. And we say this prayer in your name, in the name of the Ascended Masters, our love, center, guides, and friends, and the name of each and every person listening to the show. Thank you, and so it is. Yes, Jay, thank you. Jay just said, have a blessed week, everyone. Absolutely. And, God loves you through you. Make those good decisions for yourselves. See you next week. Thank you, darling Judy. Appreciate it. Love you, too. Bye-bye.